What kinds of discussions, if any, did you have with her about the goals of therapy? Did she bring up curability, survival, et cetera?
Yeah, and I think that's always an upfront discussion as well. So pointing out that it is not a curable disease, but certainly a treatable disease, and that whole pathway, again, induction to stem cell transplant, looking for long-term survival. And with the idea that once you start therapy, you're probably never going to be off of therapy. So we keep people on a maintenance regimen, and the hardest part, hopefully, is going to be the induction and certainly the stem cell transplant, but to make the maintenance part of the treatment as palatable as possible so that you can continue a normal life.
How did you assess her? I mean, this is not easy for a 47-year-old to hear, even though it's treatable, that, you know, really not likely to be cured. How did you assess sort of her coping strategies? Had she ever encountered a serious medical problem before?
No, she hadn't. Short of the degenerative joint disease, which was probably pretty significant for a person of her age, she really did not have any significant stressors like that. And so we actually referred her to one of our counselors, and we got her kids involved as well. So they talked to her. And so I think involving the kids with the whole thing was pretty good.
So she gets the RVD, sounds like she's responding. Again, how did you explain to her what the rationale is to go through an autologous transplant? What an autologous transplant is, and what should she expect from it?
Yeah, and so obviously the rationale is that at least the current data suggests that going through an autologous stem cell transplant increases not just progression-free survival, but overall survival. And so long-term survival is what we're looking at here, so we can get her through and, again, not have to intensify her treatment later. That would be a good thing if we just keep her on maintenance. And so it was that whole idea that the induction chemotherapy gets everything down to its lowest possible degree, maybe even what we call complete response, but that we still know it's there. And so the high-dose chemotherapy that she was going to receive would hopefully take care of the majority of what was left.
And what do you tell them to expect in terms of side effects and toxicity and being out of work, et cetera?
Yeah. And so I think the transplant team does a really good. So the way our organization is set up, we have a transplant floor and a transplant team. They don't actually follow the patient all the way through. So we refer them up to transplant. They do a pretty good job giving them all the side effects. But obviously, we prep them ahead of time and talk to them about potentially spending the 2 weeks in the hospital, losing their hair, potential mucositis, things like that. And that usually the magic number is day 100 when they can expect to be back. But some people a lot sooner than that, especially younger people, can be back and much more active sooner.
Now, you admit people to the hospital?
Yeah, we do admit people. I know there are some outpatient ones. We have not. We don't yet have that.
And how long are they typically in the hospital?
Typically, I always tell them 2 weeks, and that's about where it runs.
So what happened with this lady when she went for a transplant?
Oh, she did great, exactly like you might expect. Good young bone marrow, went in and responded very nicely, and she was out within 2 weeks. And recovery, I think she was kicked back to us probably by about day 70, long before that day 100.